This goes out to the AVS fam, to the crew getting ready at the Pepsi can. DJ Triple T banging thunder with the high jams. My dog Bernie Yan smiles in the West stands.
The ColoradoHockey.com podcast is brought to you by FSFAM.com, AVSFAM.com.
I reached out to my good buddy Kevin Goff of the Burgundy Brigade podcast to get a different perspective on the season that is so far from the Avs. Getting a different perspective really was a nice touch because it had been a while since I'd heard somebody else's take on the Avs, somebody other than Twitter. And Kevin had some really good and interesting points that made me reconsider some of my own points and my own thoughts. We jump right into it with me asking Kevin what his thoughts are on the Avs so far this year.
Well, it's a roller coaster for sure. I mean, we expected a lot of ups and downs from the get-go. The team was younger. The team's much different. A lot of inexperienced players with little or no NHL experience on the team. So I think they kind of shot out of a. It seemed like they got shot out of a cannon at the beginning, and were kind of had a lot of. Seemed like they might have just been carried by a lot of that youthful exuberance. That was going, and they seemed to be executing things a lot better as well, and the lows were not very low, and the highs were much higher than I think a lot of us expected at the start of this particular season, especially given exactly how young the team was, and now we're down to some pretty low lows again, where they've lost what, five in a row and lost six of their last seven. That's what it was. And I think the big kicker, the one that really hurt everybody, was the loss to Buffalo, who is just atrocious this season. And the Avs did everything they could to make Buffalo look like a playoff contending team. And when Buffalo was here, they looked like a much better team than the Avalanche did, which is disappointing because the Avalanche are a much better team than the way they played. But again, it's just one of those. It's a team that's learning how to be a competitive NHL team night in and night out, and it's still not there.
I agree. And when you have these diehard fans, I mean, there's not many in the stands anymore, it looks like, when I'm watching on TV, and you have these diehard fans, like, those are the games you have to win. People want to think they won the trade, you know?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of turned into a running joke, that whole Zadorov gets secondary assist for potentially, you know, having a puck hit him just before it goes in the net. Hashtag won the trade, right? It's fun to just play with that. But it would be nice to see the Avalanche actually not just beat the Sabres, who really is a team they should beat, but handle it in such a way that they keep O'Reilly off the score sheet. I think O'Reilly's maybe notched points almost every time he's played the Avs, but I mean, that's another thing Avalanche fans have become used to, the former Avalanche players getting on the score sheet almost guaranteed against the Avalanche.
Yeah, I mean, the last game we saw Budaj in that, I'm like, oh no, we're done.
Exactly right.
He's going to play that game we never really got out of him, and he's going to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
But Zadorov, not bad. I mean, he has his moments, right? He has these young guy moments and he's doing some dumb things, but his upside is still good enough for me to think that maybe he can pull this together.
And honestly, I feel like the downs that he gets are far overreacted to. I don't feel like he's ever gotten to a point this season where he's just made one of those horrifically head-scratching, face-palming moments that you just go, what in the name of everything were you thinking? And I could be wrong, but his upsides are certainly more exciting to see when he steps into someone just the right way and clobbers him, or out of nowhere rushes into the zone and scores to tie a game like he did. That was against Winnipeg, right?
I think so, and that's a new element to his game. That's like a Condor, but the Russian version. Yeah. I don't know what kind of birds they have.
He did that all through junior hockey. That's what it was. McNabb was saying, Zadorov said, like, he had never even heard of dumping the puck until he got into the NHL.
Because, that's hilarious.
You know, you get into the junior leagues, and you're just that much better than everybody. You're just that much better than everybody, but nobody's that much better than everybody in the NHL.
He seems like such a character, too. I wish I could sit down and have a chat with him.
Yeah, he does seem like a funny dude.
And we got a lot of Russians joining the team now. I mean, I think, what is it, Kamenov or whatever his name is?
Yeah, got hurt. However you pronounce it, Kamenov.
Yeah, I have no idea. But he has a legit chance, I think, if he can get healthy and give it another go. Like, he seems like a big body who skates pretty well for his size. And I don't know, man. It seems like he could play wing too. I know he lines up as a center, but I think that that's a guy that could replace somebody like a Blake Como.
Yeah, there's a lot of promise to his game for sure. He's, like you said, he's big. He's got hands. He's got good hands. I want to say the first game he played in San Antonio right after the trade, he had something like 4 points in the game. So he's got some skills for sure. It was just bad luck that his arm broke the way it did the first game.
Yeah, the Avalanche.
I mean, it wasn't a dirty play. It wasn't a bad thing. It was a good hit right into his chest, and it must have been as his. He didn't even look like he braced himself in a funny way going down to the ice. That's just how it fell.
Which, so you think it was when he hit the ice and not when so. Not the hit itself?
It didn't look like his arm was weird. I mean, again, I don't know. I'm not in the room. I'm not him.
Right. Yeah. We're speculating.
That it just looked to me like that was the only real brunt moment where his arms actually took some sort of weight. But you know, whatever. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a bummer though. I'm all about the youth movement, and I've kind of got this idea that we're not going to be in the playoffs, even though every now and then I think we are. I'm a sucker for 5 good games. I'm like, we're in. We're going to do this. We're running for it.
Same.
And then we have the last 5 games. I'm like, all right. Just have to remind yourself, man, that we're rebuilding. And I think that's what Sakic is doing. Even if Bednar's trying to, you know, get us a good winning streak so that he can maybe keep his job, I think at the end of the day, Sakic has no intention to do anything this year other than bring up our youth and see what they're all about.
Yeah. And then as soon as when the trade deadline does come out and hit, then hopefully unload some older guys who have had some better bounce back seasons just to either get a nice another young prospect or give Alan Happel a few more picks to play with.
Yeah, and I mean, Como's been on my radar, and he's earning every bit of it. I mean, he should have a really good year, right? I think this is a guy who, and it's funny too, I'll get on this in a second, but him and Yakupov, they're actually very similar in numbers, but the perception of their game is very different. But I think for him, he's a guy who's playing himself into a new job somewhere, and I think he's probably aware that he's going to be maybe going to a team that's just looking for depth, trying to make the playoffs, or maybe even make a run for the cup. And if I'm that kind of player, if I'm that guy, if I'm Como, that's exactly what I want.
That's certainly the best incentive that he can give himself right now. I feel like that's got to be on his mind. He sees where the team's going. He knows that he had a bad season last year, and that if he wants to put himself in the best situation, he's got to play well here in order to be given that opportunity to have a team that's got a shot at running deep into the playoffs. Go, that guy could give us something that we don't have right now. And really, honestly, this is more of the Como that I feel like is the actual Blake Como. This is more what his game was his first year with the Avalanche. Last year was such an anomaly for really everybody. There is rarely ever a situation in life in hockey outside of when you're the Atlanta Thrashers first coming into the NHL, where you have that much of a tidal wave of just absolute crap that happens every day. And
right.
I don't know, you can't expect all of that to continue. And Como's done a great job just keeping his head on straight and just going to work and playing his game, which is tough, which is physical, and he's certainly contributed on the penalty kill with a couple shorthanded goals and just playing good, tough, hard hockey.
What about Comfer on that penalty kill? That guy's got some skills. I wish he could finish better.
Yeah, I know. I think he's finishing better than he would have last year. His shot is improved immensely from last year to this year. And I don't know, maybe he's just getting to the point where he's still kind of making that adjustment. Cause I want to say he changed his stick, from last year, changed the curve on his stick. So it's still coming off differently, and that takes time.
And he broke his hand, right?
Yeah. And his hand was broken earlier in the year. So
I don't care what they say. He's not 100%, man. I've broken my hands in like every way you can, and they don't just get better like that. And when they start to come back together and heal, you have different connective tissue, and it's, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be mad at the guy. He's getting better chances than we are 5-on-5 sometimes.
Yes, and he does that. He's another guy that you see him as that in that potential every type of unit role, because he's playing on power plays now too. And in the coming years, hopefully that's what we end up getting from him. He is so very much, he's so in the image of Chris Drury. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Drury definitely had a higher ceiling when it came to skill, but I see him like that too, just his poise and his attitude on the ice, and he'll piss people off, but he's not going to sit there and jaw at him. He doesn't even look at him. He's like, yeah, whatever, yeah. Punch me in the face. Line change. And, you know, then you have AJ Greer, who's kind of the opposite of that. He actually has some skill too, but man, he's looking for a guy to punch him in the face, and then he wants to sit there and just, you know, I want him to get a real chance, but he is going to have to curtail that streak and that kind of edge to fight every time, like piss people off for sure, but only drop the gloves every fifth time, maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
See if you can get a streak going, you know, of games played instead of, I think he's hurt right now in San Antonio too.
Yeah, I think he's just getting back in the lineup down there.
I would love to see him get a real chance.
And that's probably going to be, as some of the older guys get out here, that's going to be what swings him into the lineup.
And those aren't even our best rookies right now. I mean, we have Kerf, he's considered a rookie, yep. Right? Yeah, and then we have Girard, who, I don't know. I mean, when he was playing great, I'm like, we absolutely should keep him around. Now that he's not playing as great as he was, I'm like, maybe we shouldn't have burned that year.
Well, I mean, the big thing to think about with that is what benefit would it have had to have him just go back and destroy everybody in the queue again? Because he would not go down to the AHL. He's still at the age where he would have to go back to his major junior team. So
that's a good point.
You could say there's nothing wrong with him going and just dominating everybody again, but at the same time, this is the competition you want him to get used to playing against. And even though hasn't maybe necessarily been as crazily dynamic, again, I don't want to say he's gone out and played poorly. A couple young guy passes, sure, here and there. That's, you expect that. It's going to happen. They're growing pains. That's unfortunately how you learn in the NHL, is you make a dumb play and go, oh, I should not do that. Okay.
Well, nobody has everything, absolutely. Right? Like, I don't, like, even the top players like Austin Matthews, like, he's got some downsides to his game too. It's just the upsides are so big, you don't care. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to somebody like, pick a guy, Yak, right? Like, he has some real upsides, but man, he has some moments, some boneheaded moments, and he's so wild and kind of crazy and seems like he's pretty loony, like he should have been a goalie. But then he, you know, he does some things that just kind of, he wins people's hearts and he loses them. And I think it's that perception, because his numbers are almost identical to Blake Como, who just gets away with it. I mean, his are hard nose penalties, but they're still penalties. Yeah. He's still in the box.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There are penalties that, and Peter McNabb talks about a lot there, and Rycroft does too. There's penalties that your team doesn't mind when you make. If you're going in, you're playing, you're making a hard play, a physical play, and it turns into a roughing penalty, the team doesn't tend to mind that. Yeah, that's, no one really likes going out and having to kill a penalty, but they're not going to be, they're not at the, when you come back to the bench, they're going to say, hey, that was a good hit in the corner. Whereas if you stop moving your feet and hook somebody, you come back to the bench and they say, dude, get off your ass and play.
Yeah. And I don't know what's going on out there, but sometimes it seems like Yak is just losing his mind for no reason. Like, he's pissed off because somebody has different colored skate laces or something, like something that random. Yeah,
he's clearly an emotional guy. He's always been that way. I want to say it was his rookie year when he was in Edmonton. There was a game here against the Avs where Duchesne scored in the empty net, like a half a second after the buzzer went off, and Yak did not like that he shot at the goal after the siren went, thought it was a late shot, and went and punched him in the face. And, you know, it's kind of always been part of who he is. And, you know, for better or worse, it's sometimes those overly competitive juices help you and give you that extra gear and that extra little oomph on your one timer. And sometimes they make you take stupid penalties when you're in the corner trying to dislodge a puck, and then you just decide, yeah, I'm just going to cross check this guy in the face for no good reason.
And if we had a great penalty kill, that'd be fine, but we don't. We have a very sporadic one.
Yeah, it's so weird. I did the penalty kill has been really good at home, and then it's just not on the road.
So this whole Landy thing, right? I mean, let's start at the beginning. I don't think the suspension is really fair. Sure, give him a game, maybe two, but that seems excessive to me.
I had absolutely no issues with the Landeskog suspension whatsoever.
The length of it, even?
This is the second time in the last year and a half that he's been suspended for cross-checking somebody recklessly in the head away from a play.
Who was that?
I want to say it was against Anaheim a couple years, like, not last season, but the previous season, just outside that 18-month thing.
I remember the Boston game where he hit Marchand, and it was a clean hit, in my opinion. It was a rough hit, a big hit for sure. Maybe he could have got a charging call.
It was blind into his head. It was blind and in the head area. So there, I mean, that's that one too. I remember what you're playing, which one you're talking about. But that's one that if it comes against, if it comes against us, we're screaming the exact same thing. We're saying it was a blind hit in the head area, that someone's got to pay for that.
I just felt like if Marchand was 4 inches taller, that's not a penalty.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
This is the big Z thing. Like the Z being big. Like, why does Dustin Byfuglien get away with things that Z never does? Is that just being in the league or what happened there?
I mean, coming back to Landeskog, he's been in trouble several times with Department of Player Safety. And he has had some bad history with shots to the head, specifically cross checks to the head. The last time he was suspended 3 games for cross-checking a guy in the back of the head, well away from the play. So it makes sense to me that he gets an extra game added on.
I wish I could remember that play.
I want to say it was against Anaheim.
I'm hoping it was Corey Perry.
It wasn't. It wasn't. I do remember that. But yeah, and so yeah, it's just I know people get supremely PO'd at the Department of Player Safety for just not being consistent about anything, and that I 100% get. There's no reason that Landy should get 4 games for doing the exact same thing as somebody else who got then nothing. For Patrick Kane specifically, did one the other day against Nashville, like 2 days after the fact, cross-checked a guy straight in the head and received nothing. Now, granted, the punishment for Kane would have been less no matter what, because Kane hasn't been suspended for that sort of thing in the past. So he probably would have been fined, if anything. And then that's just one of the, we just need to remember that whole concept of repeat offender, that label given by player safety by rule is specifically for the amount of money they're going to fine you. They will always and forever take into account how many times you've been suspended in the past. Always and forever.
Yeah, and you know what? All these things are easier to take when you're winning. When you're losing, you're just trying to find anything to be pissed at, and the refs are easy. The DOP is easy. It's just one of those things, too, where it's kind of like, yeah, he's a lot more fun when we're winning. When we're not and he does something stupid, you're like, come on, man.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it's hard to look at it with too much of an even head, but again, like I said, I don't have a single issue with Landeskog's suspension. He's got to be smarter with his stick.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I saw a clip recently where Tkachuk was like, they say it was spearing. He's just kind of jabbing at a guy at the end of his stick from the bench,
The bench. And I'm like, league hates that. They do not want people on the bench getting involved in anything that's happening on the ice. So
I didn't see what came of it, if anything, but that's one to me where I'm like,
he was suspended for a game, which is not enough in my opinion. Cause again, he's already been suspended multiple times for things. And that's something that's kind of an egregious thing from the bench. It should have been at least 2 in my opinion on him.
And what, he's 2 years into the league, if that. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's fair that he got suspended. The length on that, I don't know. That's a weird one to me. But I watched it and I was like, it's not like he really shoved it in there too hard, but he did it. And that's the fact, right? Like, start to blur those lines and these things become unclear. Like, what is okay and what isn't? And do you have to be a star player to get special treatment? And like I said, though, it's so easy to jump on that bandwagon when you're pissed at the whole world.
Yeah, that's very true.
So talk to me about Varley. I have this theory on him. I'll tell you it first and you tell me what you think.
Oh, go for it. Yeah.
I think Varley's healthy. I think that he maybe suffers more from just being disengaged from being on a team that has sucked for so long. I think that if he got re-inspired, like intrinsic interest in this team again, and not just, you know, his own career and trying not to embarrass himself or the whole team, but if he was like just really on his game again, I feel like he could be a guy who wins games for us. But at the same time, I don't know how you get on your game when you're playing so little. And I get that he's been hurt a little bit, but I feel like they're a little heavy with Bernier and that they could play Varley a little more. Like, are they being overly careful, do you think, with his health or what's going on with Varley?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to think about with him because he has a very well-trod history of injuries. And they're recent and they're persistent and they're always in the same spot and they always happen when they try to ride them those long stretches of starts. And but on the other hand, I don't feel like playing your backup every third game is, especially when you're a team that's trying to be, they were, like the Avs had been for a good long while, trying to stay in a playoff race. I don't personally agree with that philosophy of playing your backup every third game. Sure, when you find your back-to-backs, fine. Obviously, that's pretty much standard practice throughout the league, anyways. It's such a delicate line to walk, because you want your starter to be playing often and making an impact, because they're always going to get the most of the action in the games played, but you want to keep them fresh so that they're not overly tired. And you also don't want that, because then that can lead to more injuries. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's that Varley is disengaged, or if it's just he's not the stop the world Avenger style world changing goalie that came through that one year the Avs won the division. A lot of stuff went right for that team.
And a lot of goalie. Well, not a lot, but Craig Anderson had about the same experience.
Absolutely.
And they may have gave up on him too early. I don't know. But to me, I mean, we saw how good Varley can be. And then there was injuries a lot of the way. And now that he's healthy, it seems like, sure, he's moving better, but I don't know if he's actually playing better. And you could put that on the team. There's so many different areas that could come from.
And he tends to be streaky, just like much of the rest of his team. There, he goes through 3-4 games at a time where he will stop the world. You could have the boulder from Indiana Jones coming down on him, and he'd be like, I got this. We're good. And there's other games where it just seems like anytime you look for that pivotal moment where he desperately needs to stop it, even if he's played well up to that point, he finds a way to let one in that shouldn't go in.
Yeah, there's been some softies, both goalies.
Absolutely. And you know, you can put a lot of that on the team in front of him as well. Sometimes, you know, sometimes they just make bad turnovers and put him in a bad spot. Other times the puck just bounces weird, where I wanted, like, against the Devils, there was their second goal that just, like, it was so weird. He made the first save and it was flitting, sitting up there, and it came and landed on its side and bounced just as Zad's stick was coming through to try to clear it. And then it goes and sits and lands perfectly flat as soon as Boyle's stick was coming in to hit it. It's just like, well, screw you, hockey gods. That's just shitty is what that is.
I mean, do we really have a hockey gods thing, or is that, again, just us losing, going, everything's wrong? Like, it seems at times like we cannot get a straight bounce or a decent call from the ref or a review that goes our way. Like, I don't know, man. I question myself all the time. I'm like, no. This is legit. This is just where we're at right now. But other times I'm like,
there's definitely
something
to be said for that. I mean, a lot of times you can definitely say in hockey, you make your own luck. There is a lot of that to absolutely be said. Absolutely. But I mean, there's other moments where you look at stuff like that and you just go, well, God, that just plain sucks. And that's part of the game. No doubt.
If you're an elite team, not elite, well, I'm going to say that. If you're a good team, you have to beat the other team and you have to beat the refs, regardless of how each one of them plays, right? So that's one too, where we're so far from that. I feel like we're fragile enough that one bad call could really screw us. And I think that's one of the things we could get over. If you're looking for metrics on how the Avs can be better, that's one of them right there, is the way they respond. And it has been better, but it could get...
I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. To this point this season, the Avalanche have done a very good job responding to things going negatively against them. Now, granted, this is the longest losing streak they've had this year. They haven't really let it get past three games to this point. So now we have to see, are they going to keep pushing to and doing the right things, or are they going to let it start to slip away again? And I mean, even you can say what you want about the Tampa game. I don't think they played terribly in Tampa Bay.
No, that game against the Buffalo Sabres would have been a win. Yeah. That effort, I mean, what they did there. But yeah, I mean, we play down to the ability of the other team. And then, you know, a lot of times we play as good as some of the better teams who are maybe taking a night off against us. But you know, coming off of what we did, Landy being gone, just a bad streak, and then hitting them, that was going to be rough either way. We didn't embarrass ourselves, and to me, that was a win.
That's exactly. And, you know, you're going to, as you said, we all have to still be pretty realistic about where the team is. They're building. They're in bringing in a lot of young players. This is not a team that's going to compete for a Stanley Cup. And against a team that is going to compete for a Stanley Cup, Tampa Bay, they played very, very well. And I think you got to look at a lot of those things and find and yes, you can say there's no moral victories in sports, but when you're a team trying to build to become one of those teams and you see where some of your young guys match up, then yes, there are moral victories because you know you're not going to be competing at that level yet.
Yeah. And sometimes you just have to turn Twitter off and enjoy the storylines, good or bad, you know? Because Twitter is a mess at times.
I was scrolling through today again, and now it's time to fire Jared Bednar again, I guess. So,
are we back there? What about Sakic? Is he still
doing
good?
Well, I think Sakic's still going to be riding the positive trails of the Duchene trade for a while, because man alive, did he get the moon
Don't forget Kerf, man. He came in playing really good. He's had a little bit of a downslide here, but I think that he's a guy where if he can just find a way to be a little more consistent and level out those ups and downs, he's a real fighter.
He's really proven his worth already, I think. The guy, he's very clever with the puck. For his size, he certainly doesn't give up a lot to other players. He's still learning the game, as we saw in Buffalo, where both he and EJ made ridiculously bad plays to get that, give up that first shorthanded goal. You're going to have that again with a young guy coming out of college. But again, to this point, he's shown remarkable maturity for a kid who had never played an NHL game coming into the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's been great. And I hope that he just finds a way to stay relevant and stay in the lineup, because I think he's a huge help and he's the closest thing we have to depth.
He's got to be one of the best passers on the team.
He has great vision. He really does. I still think a lot of his game that's underrated is right in front of that net. He doesn't stay there and take that beating, but he finds a way to kind of sneak in when there's a pad pass or when there's a shot that just bounces straight out. Those are some of his goals.
When you're that size, you actually have that ability to just kind of sneak in and get underneath guys, because you have that, you have the leverage. You have the ability to just become the fulcrum and just sort of show up out of nowhere and be like, hello, here I am.
Yeah, or you could get a Mike Richey who just takes the beating. He wasn't really that big of a guy. I've met him in person a couple times, and you know, a lot of these guys aren't as big as you think, but he's one guy that I always imagined him bigger for the beatings he took. But you know, just that same thing. If you can get there and if you have the vision, or if you can think ahead and know where the puck's going to go, you can do really good. But if you're sitting on the half wall all the time, or if you're high in the slot as a pivot player on the power play, I think that's where they're maybe misusing him. I think we have enough guys to play that role where he could be a guy who's just quarterbacking or doing a lot of strolling around. Like, he's the one guy who has freedom to go wherever the hell he wants and just show up when it's time for
that. Like him on the half boards on the power play, especially when he is when he kind of sweeps up to the point and walks in that's when he's at his most dangerous, because he's got like three different options and he can make all three of them happen depending on what he wants to do.
Well, who does he spend his time with? He's typically out with McKinnon, I think, right?
The second unit. So whoever, because the first unit is always McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog. And I think recently they've been going Girard and Compher with those guys.
Gotcha.
And then the second unit tends to be Kerfoot, Yakupov when he's in the lineup. / Soderberg. Barry's up there. I forget who the other guy is. Colin Wilson tends to go stand in front of the net. And
that guy's a no-show every game for me. I don't know if I'm just missing what he brings to the game, but I expected more. Maybe it's just the last name with some of our history with Wilson's on the team. You know, a big physical guy or something. But man, I don't know what he's bringing.
I mean, younger guys are playing better than he is right now, and that's why we're not seeing him. And he was hurt for a while, but I mean, I think the team also probably expected him to be more impactful, or for other younger guys not to be quite as ready. And as a result, his playing time has suffered.
Yeah, he has as many goals as Barbario. I was just taking a peek to see. Sometimes I think these things, that's why I'm really curious. It's like I have these impressions, but then I look at the numbers and I'm like, well, hold on. I mean, Tyson Barrie is doing pretty good. He's got 18 points, which is fourth on the team.
Yeah.
You know, is he really playing that bad of a game right now? I mean, you got EJ way further down, but everybody thinks he's playing way better. And maybe he is if you look at full minutes and what he's actually doing on the ice.
I want to say it was Tampa's second goal. No, their third goal. Because the second goal was that ridiculous tip, wasn't it? The third goal.
Like, come on, man. That guy's a real player, though, man. People underestimate
him. The third goal Tampa had, where Barry lost his man behind the net and then tried to scramble back in the wrong place instead of staying with the puck. That was, and then, yeah. I mean, then everyone else is in front of the net is now three steps behind the play, and there's just no, and Barry can't recover, and no one can recover because whatever decision they make, it's now wrong because there's three Lightning players right there and two Avalanche players because Barry's off behind the net going, doing whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. He's got an upside and a downside too.
Like I said, if it's working, you don't mind it. A month. I feel like Barry has not had a shot that hits that has made the goalie make a save in a long time. People give Zadorov a lot of crap for that. But I feel like every time Barry's one timing or shooting anything, it's off the boards and either out of the zone or whatever. It just,
I don't think he's ever been the same since he got hurt. And I think it was a Wild game where he got hurt when we were actually making a run at the playoffs or maybe in the playoffs. I can't remember now, but he was just magic. He really was. And the whole season kind of was for the whole group. But you know, once they have a high, it's really hard to accept anything less than that. And some of these guys can't maintain that.
It's weird. It's something that's gone on with the team for a long time because they have, They will have stretches where they'll play really solid hockey, top to bottom, and you go, okay, they see how to do it, and then they just stop. I don't know what makes them stop. Whether it's just they relax mentally, they can't deal with it physically, or they just get overconfident. I don't know what it is, but this goes back to Joe Sacco days coaching, where the team will just have stretches where they'll put 35 on, score four goals. The other team maybe will get a few because defense has always been a little sketchy. And then after the next week, it'll be like eight games in a row of 15 shots on goal total and complete futility and embarrassing puck movement in every way, shape, and form. And I just don't know what it will take for the team to do it consistently throughout a full season. I just don't know.
I hear you. I think everybody's looking for that answer. Everybody's trying to solve it themselves, but nobody's got it yet. All right, man, two more things and then I'm going to let you go. Give me one player for each of these things. So give me a player who is thriving, one who's surviving, one who's dying, just as far as their being on the team and their play and what they bring.
Well, I think the easy thriving is Nathan MacKinnon. Because
absolutely right, he's getting confidence.
Yeah,
in the shot,
I mean, it's I don't know what turned on there, but holy cow, I'm glad it turned on.
I think to a certain degree he was playing good, but to a certain degree Landy being out and that whole experiment was good for him. It was sort of a catalyst to him saying, you know what, I got to be that guy. If I was wearing the C, what would I do? And I think he sort of played like that. But it's hard to get the other people around you to play better when you're just not seeing that same effort. I mean, he's good. He's got skill, but man, that guy brings it every night with effort for the most part. Every now and then he has a little period off, but it's rarely.
We've seen him get to those moments where it seems like he's made the I think Buffalo was a good example of it, where he looked at it and was looking around and going, well, I guess nobody else is going to do this, so I might as well go do it.
Sometimes he does that, like he's going to drop the mitts with somebody. He's like, well, nobody else is sticking up for our guys. I'll do it. Like, nah, man, how about you hold on?
And he
you
just goes out and then takes and does the necessary thing, scores the goal that needs to be scored or sets up the thing that needs to be set up and is the guy out there who's making the difference. And
I think that's him. I don't think he's trying to do that because he thinks that's what you're supposed to do. I think he's just reacting the way that he was.
Yeah, if that's the case, then that's going to be what makes it consistent.
All right, give me a surviving
guy. That's tough. I think someone who's surviving maybe Sven Andraghetto. Because he's still in the lineup and he does have moments where it's unfortunate because he played so well with Rantanen and MacKinnon when he first came in. And even at the start of the year, he was still really solid with them and something fell off, but he has games and stretches of times where he's still doing really well. He's still making a lot of good plays. He'll go to the net, he'll create some offense, but he also still has a lot of those games where now he just kind of disappears. So he's there ish.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. He's surviving for sure. What do you got on dying?
I think I'm going to have to go with Mark Barbario.
I hope so. I know that sounds mean, but come on, man. How is everybody else playing this Bednar game where they earn their ice time, yet he's just killing it out there? He gets to stay.
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I think part of it was Nemeth was out injured for a while, and they don't feel like. And I know Lindholm was injured too. There were a few injuries on the defense, weren't there? So Lindholm and Nemeth were both hurt. They're both now kind of they're both back and healthy. Although Nemeth is just he just came back against Tampa, so he's going to sort of be easing into things here. They're trying to get Bigras, I know, and Muranov more time playing bigger minutes against lesser opponents down in the AHL. And then I guess, I don't know, I just, it feels like, it comes back to the whole, why, what does Duncan Siemens have to do to get some sort of ice time?
Well, he didn't embarrass himself, so that's a start. I mean, I hardly noticed him on the ice, but I eventually did, and I was like, well, he hasn't done any boneheaded thing yet. This is good. That's a start.
You know what? For a defenseman whose primary game is defense, it's good to not be noticed.
Yeah, if he can stick around long enough for this to not be scary or get too many nerves before a game and just, you know, he's just going out to play hockey, I think he'll do okay. But he's never going to be amazing. I think he's one of those guys we're always going to be suspect of his feet and maybe his hockey senses, but not his toughness. And I think that if we can find a good partner for him,
and
he'll be okay.
Good partner for him, and just make sure you're putting him out in the right situations. And I feel like if you can just do those things, he's not going to be the number one guy that everybody kind of hoped he would be when he was drafted in the first round. But he's also I think he's also a competent enough player that you can put him out on a lower pairing and not feel like you're going to have to go for an adventure.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It's good times, though, right? If you're an Avs fan and you're into the storylines in the youth, it's a great time to be watching. If you're waiting for them to win a cup, you're going to have
to hold on. I mean, if you're going to, it's just as you said, it's got to, you've got to approach it, I think, with the right mindset. And I've been guilty of this as well. I was so pissed after the Sabres game. I was not happy with anything that was going on there. And if you just approach it with, this is a development year, we've got a million young guys on the team that are going to be learning their way, and there's so much promise, and there's a lot of young guys in the system now that you can look at and go, man, when these guys are ready, they're gonna be difference makers. That's then, yes, it's absolutely a good time to be watching. But if you're just in it to say this team has to win every single night and I will accept nothing less, then you might not want to be watching the Avalanche, and you should probably stay off Twitter.
Drop the mic, walk off stage. I agree 100%, man. Huge thanks to Kevin for taking the time to talk hockey with us today. You can find Kevin at BRG Brigade, Kevin, and his co-host Aaron Music at Avalangelist on Twitter as well. Be sure to check out their podcast, The Burgundy Brigade. You can get it on iTunes or anywhere that you can get a podcast. This and every other show that we do is brought to you by Avsfam, absfam.com. Awesome hockey shirts for awesome hockey people. Go check them out. There's 3 or 4 new ones you probably haven't seen. absfam.com. Stay awesome.